Around the world this weekend, people in Asian cultures are celebrating the Lunar New Year. Some in America today simply call it Chinese New Year because it falls on the same date as the one celebrated in China. Although this year, due to the viral outbreak, celebrations across that country will be considerably subdued. But it is also celebrated in other places that use the Chinese lunisolar year, places such as Korea and Mongolia and Vietnam. Though their traditions vary somewhat, certain practices remain common, sweeping out the house to clear away any troubles from the past year, for instance, honoring deceased ancestors at home or at their graves, giving young children lucky money, dispelling any bad spirits, wishing everyone a long, healthy, happy life. People express their hopes for good things to come, hopes that all of us harbor in similar fashion. Maybe you are celebrating this holiday with friends or family. Many of us do. His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama of Tibet remembers how exciting he found this time in his homeland when he led the great prayer festival there, performing rituals and recitations in front of enormous crowds. Of course, he did this when he was younger and newer to his role, and those things still felt novel to him. He says the holiday no longer matters as much to him these days. Since he was expelled from Tibet in 1959, it has been several decades since he has been able to take part in the festivities in his own temple. Living in exile in India on the other side of the Himalayas, the Dalai Lama has become an immensely popular figure, a persuasive and appealing spokesperson for the Buddhist tradition he represents. His audience now is global. "My religion is very simple," he has famously stated. "My religion is kindness." Is it any wonder that he is internationally revered? In 1989, he was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for his commitment to nonviolence, and even at his advanced age, that has not wavered. He still advocates tirelessly for global cooperation. While we Unitarian Universalists generally tend to be more familiar with Western religions than Eastern ones, we recognize, as our UUA principles and purposes declare, that this living tradition which we share draws from many sources, six most notably. Among them is wisdom from the world's religions, which inspires us in our ethical and spiritual life, which makes us ever more grateful for the religious pluralism that enriches and ennobles our faith and inspires us to deepen our understanding and expand our vision. Throughout this program year, I've been preaching a sermon series about the six sources, each one in turn. This third one could not be more timely. Today, many of us here find wisdom from the Buddhist teachings to be uniquely instructive in our ethical and spiritual lives. And the Dalai Lama's is frequently the voice most eloquently expounding them. In Ethics for a New Millennium, the Dalai Lama urges readers to create as meaningful a life as possible for themselves. Do this by engaging in spiritual practice if you can. As I hope I have made clear, there's nothing mysterious about this. It consists in nothing more than acting out of concern for others, he explains. Once you do this more regularly, you will gradually be able to reorder your habits and attitudes so that you think less about your own narrow concerns and more of others. In doing so, you will find you enjoy peace and happiness. You may have noticed this emotional shift in your own lives. For the Dalai Lama, the ethical and spiritual dimensions of our human existence are intertwined. He believes that the survival of both our species and our planet depend on our recognizing what he terms the fundamental oneness of the human family. The Dalai Lama urges us to uphold universal principles that foster basic decency across all lines of difference, be they national, ethnic, religious, or economic. What we consider to be self-interest, he would consider to be self-defeating, because the smaller our preoccupations are, the bigger our problems seem to us. We need to widen our awareness to gain the larger perspective, a truly global one. As the Dalai Lama observes, our patterns in developed economies during late capitalism have become exaggerated and distorted, making it hard for us to be either routinely ethical or routinely spiritual. Here we feel the continuous time pressure of incessant activity and face the constant distraction of overstimulation. We produce and consume and then produce some more. Instead of rejoicing in the opportunity we have to contribute to others' well-being, we merely take our pleasures where we can. We shrink from considering others on the grounds that we are too busy, the Dalai Lama notes. But in this, we engage only the coarsest and most elementary levels of the human spirit. By being inattentive to the needs of others, inevitably, we wind up harming them. Our deeper yearnings for connection go unfulfilled, and increasingly, we let our baser drives govern our days and then our lives. Eventually, we are in danger of being driven to despair, as a collective of individuals, but also as an American society today. What I propose is a spiritual revolution, the Dalai Lama states. He declares that almost all the mental and emotional suffering, which is a feature of modern living, including the sense of hopelessness, of loneliness, and so on, lessens the moment we begin to engage in actions motivated by concern for others. When we stop considering each other competitors for resources and start regarding one another as collaborators in building a better future, everything changes, and suddenly. It helps to remember, as the Dalai Lama notes, that our time here on Earth is very limited. Consider yourself a tourist, he reminds us. Think of the world as it is seen from space, so small and insignificant, yet so beautiful. Could there really be anything to be gained from harming others during our stay here, he asks. After all, this world we inhabit is one we must share. That Buddhist prayer we spoke this morning articulated an inspirational vision of love unrestrained, without hate or enmity, and encouraged us to practice it as best we are able, ourselves, as often as we can. Display a heart of boundless love for all the world, in all its height and depth and broad extent. What a broad extent that is. This is the type of prayer Buddhists characterize as a loving-kindness meditation. In it, people wish for all beings to abound in well-being and peace, understanding that these spiritual states are not finite resources, but rather limitless riches and timeless treasures. Our spiritual means only grow when we are extravagant with them, when we no longer try to distinguish between the worthy and the unworthy. Paradoxically, we are rewarded by what we give away indiscriminately to others. In that story for all ages we heard this morning, the old Buddhist monk was testing his students when he asked them to steal from people to support the upkeep of the temple. Only the wisest of those students knew to refuse the request, understanding that any theft he committed would diminish him and prove morally bankrupting in the end. This student understood that the temple first had to be supported from within. Our own heart, our own mind, Dalai Lama concludes, the doctrine is compassion. Love for others and respect for their rights and dignity, no matter who or what they are, ultimately, these are all we need. We cannot live peacefully or well or honestly long without them. The Reverend James Ishmael Ford is a Zen Buddhist priest in the Boundless Way tradition, in addition to being a respected UU minister. He describes the central insights of Buddhism as simply these. Life is marked by unsatisfactoriness. Unsatisfactoriness is caused by grasping. Unsatisfactoriness can have an end because there is a way through, not out of life. And it is the path of liberation we follow when we regularly make right and ethical choices. Buddhists call these four insights the noble truths into the human condition. At bare minimum, ethical rules for living include our not killing, not stealing, not lying, not misusing sex, not becoming intoxicated. These injunctions apply as much to laypersons as they do to priests, nuns, and monks. Buddhist practices direct us to remain awake and alert, open-eyed, and clear-headed about our present circumstance. The spiritual unit of time in Buddhism is not the year or the day or even the hour. Rather, it is the moment. The instant when we are, as Linda Barnes writes, suspended between all that was and all that might be. This very moment. This between time, when past meets future, when we might discover a faith that reminds us that right now, right here, is enough. It is enough for all of us living. The moment we inhale or exhale, we realize that we are as fully alive as we will ever be. The Dalai Lama is fond of quoting the old Tibetan maxim, the next life or tomorrow, we can never be sure which will arrive first. None of us can ever be certain, so meditating on our mortality can be an immensely clarifying exercise, as it has been for wise ones throughout the ages. The best way to ensure that when we approach death, we do so without remorse, is to ensure that in the present moment, we conduct ourselves responsibly and with compassion for others, the Dalai Lama insists. He adds, this is in our own interest. There is no denying that our happiness is inextricably bound up with the happiness of others. There's no denying that if society suffers, we ourselves suffer. There is little joy to be found in any privatized happiness. It leaves no lasting legacy. Hardly any traces in its wake. Recalling our own mortality might prompt us to make different choices day by day. We feel deep regret over trivial matters while keeping from doing what is genuinely important. We think ourselves very clever, but how do we use our abilities, the Dalai Lama asks. In focusing on the mundane, what is essential remains hidden from us. At best, we get through life without too much trouble. But at worst, we add to the sum of human misery by not accurately accounting for our lives. If we gauge our worth by the number of competitive advantages we have, or our popularity with our peers, or our material wealth or social standing, or even the accolades that others have awarded us, we attempt to distinguish ourselves in ways that can cost us genuine contentment. When we practice boundless love and goodwill toward all, we feel our connections with others more powerfully than our differences. Humans need both ethical and spiritual practices in order to coexist peacefully. While ethics instruct us on what behaviors to curtail and what wrongs to refrain from committing, Spiritual traditions tell us how we should extend ourselves to others, the Dalai Lama explains, and what relation, not just what obligation, we have to maintain with them. May every living being, seen or unseen, those dwelling far off, those dwelling nearby, those already born, those waiting to be born, we recited in our loving kindness meditation this morning, may all attain inward peace. May we discover that inward peace so that we can impart it to one another. The fundamental oneness of the human family that Dalai Lama describes is an intergenerational as well as transgenerational phenomenon, and the customs of the Lunar New Year honor that fact. Tribute is paid to the departed ancestors, and wealth is paid forward to the children. The old is cleared away to make room for the new, and bad spirits are banished while space is held open. It takes tremendous discipline when we are in such a suspended time not to grasp backward at the past or forward at the future, but rather to observe the moment we are occupying, and further, observe it with honesty. This moment feels fraught. We in America are at the start of another election cycle and confront everywhere the consequences of a worsening climate crisis. The global refugee crisis is larger than it has been in decades. We all need the sort of spiritual revolution that can guide us through the moral morass we both face and create. In all likelihood, the Dalai Lama will never again celebrate another Lunar New Year in Tibet, as the Chinese occupation continues there and his exile persists. He was identified as the reincarnation of the 13th Dalai Lama when he was merely 2, brought to the monastery when he was 6, examined and named His Holiness when he was aged 15, and then forced to flee as a political refugee when he was just 24. So it has been more than 60 years since he set foot in the country that believes him to be its spiritual leader. Perhaps you have seen him speak or heard an interview or read one of his books. His wisdom is widely sought. But in 2011, the Dalai Lama renounced all of his quote-unquote temporal power and surrendered any political authority over Tibet. More recently, he has questioned whether he might ever be reincarnated in his homeland, and even hinted that he might be the last Dalai Lama in history. He has suggested that the world may not have use for another Dalai Lama. He has also suggested that there may come a time when we have no further use of Buddhism itself, because the people of the world will have grasped their universal responsibility to all humanity and embraced a supremely boundless love. At least, that is his hope and his prayer. You may have heard this marvelous Buddhist proverb, "The finger that points to the moon is not the moon." The finger that points to the moon is not the moon, yet how often we confuse them. The cosmic truth of our existence dwarfs our ability to delineate it neatly or communicate it clearly. At some point, we will all have to surrender whatever temporal power we have been given on Earth and release all our particular claims to possessions and places and just make our home in the moonlight. Each Lunar New Year reminds us that as swiftly as time passes, it consists solely of moments. In the clearest of these, we can catch a good glimpse of that proverbial moon. Some companions of ours may also have it in their sights. We see it reflected on their lovely faces. Isn't that what we all came into the world to see?